Chapter 70. How the same effect is from God and from the natural agent. Some find it difficult to understand how natural effects are ascribed to God and to the activity of nature, for it would seem impossible that one action should proceed from two agents. Hence, if the action productive of a natural effect proceeds from a natural body, it does not proceed from God. Again, if a thing can be done sufficiently by means of one, it is superfluous to do it by means of several, for we observe that nature does not employ two instruments where one suffices. Since, then, the divine power suffices to produce natural effects, it is superfluous to employ for the production of the same effects the powers of nature also. Or if the forces of nature suffice, it is superfluous for the divine power to work for the same effect. Besides, if God produces the whole natural effect, nothing of the effect is left for the natural agent to produce. Therefore, seemingly, it is impossible that God produce the same effects as natural things. However, these arguments offer no difficulty if we mind what has been said already. For two things may be considered in every agent, namely the thing itself that acts, and the power whereby it acts. Thus fire by its heat makes a thing hot. Now the power of the lower agent depends on the power of the higher agent, in so far as the higher agent gives the lower agent the power whereby it acts, or preserves that power, or applies it to action. Thus the craftsman applies the instrument to its proper effect, although sometimes he does not give the instrument the form whereby it acts, nor preserves that form, but merely puts it into motion. Consequently, the action of the lower agent must not only proceed from it through the latter's proper power, but also through the power of all the higher agents, for it acts by virtue of them all. And just as the lowest agent is found to be immediately active, so the power of the first agent is found to be immediate in the production of the effect, because the power of the lowest agent does not of itself produce this effect, but by the power of the proximate higher agent, and this by the power of a yet higher agent, so that the power of the supreme agent is found to produce the effects of itself, as though it were the immediate cause, as may be seen in the principles of demonstration, the first of which is immediate. Accordingly, just as it is not unreasonable that one action be produced by an agent and by the virtue of that agent, so is it not absurd that the same effect be produced by the inferior agent and by God, and by both immediately, though in a different way. It is also evident that there is nothing superfluous if nature produce its proper effect and God produce it also, since nature does not produce it except by God's power. Nor is it superfluous, if God can produce all natural effects by himself, that they should be produced by certain other causes, because this is not owing to insufficiency of his power, but to the immensity of his goodness. Wherefore it was his will to communicate his likeness to things, not only in the point of their being, but also in the point of their being causes of other things. For it is in these two ways that all creatures in common have the divine likeness bestowed on them, as we proved above. This way to the beauty of order is made evident in creatures. It is also clear that the same effect is ascribed to a natural cause and to God, not as though part were effected by God and part by the natural agent, but the whole effect proceeds from each, yet in different ways, just as the whole of the one same effect is ascribed to the instrument, and again the whole is ascribed to the principal agent. Chapter 71. That divine providence does not entirely exclude evil from things. From the foregoing it is also clear that divine providence, which governs things, does not prevent corruption, defects and evil from being in the world. For the divine government whereby God works among things, does not exclude the operation of second causes, as we have already shown. Now, a fault may occur in an effect through a fault in the secondary active cause, without there being any fault in the first agent. Thus there may be a fault in the work of a craftsman who is perfect in his craft, on account of some defect in the instrument. Even so, a man with strong motive power may limp, through no fault in the motive power, but because his leg is not straight. Accordingly, in the things moved and governed by God, defect and evil may be found on account of defects in the secondary agents, although there is no defect in God. Moreover, perfect goodness would not be found in things, unless there were degrees of goodness, so that, to wit, there be some things better than others, else all the possible degrees of goodness would not be fulfilled, nor would any creature be found like to God in the point of being better than others. Moreover, this would do away with the chief beauty in things if the order resulting from distinction and disparity were abolished, and what is more, the absence of inequality in goodness would involve the absence of multitude, since it is by reason of things differing from one another that one is better than another, for instance, the animate than the inanimate, and the rational than the irrational. Consequently, if there were absolute equality among things, there would be but one created good, which is clearly derogatory to the goodness of the creature. Now, the higher degree of goodness is that a thing be good and unable to fail from goodness, and the lower degree is of that which can fail from goodness. Wherefore, the perfection of the universe requires both degrees of goodness. Now, it belongs to the providence of the governor to preserve and not to diminish perfection in the things governed. Therefore, it does not belong to the providence of God entirely to exclude from things the possibility of failing from goodness. But evil results from this possibility, because that which can fail, at times does fail, and this very deficiency of the good is evil, as we have proved. Therefore, it does not belong to the divine providence to ward off evil entirely from things. Again, in every government the best thing is that provision be made for the things governed, according to their mode, for in this consists the justice of the regime. Consequently, even as it would be contrary to the right notion of human rule, if the governor of a state were to forbid men to act according to their various duties, except perhaps for the time being, on account of some particular urgency, so would it be contrary to the notion of God's government, if he did not allow creatures to act in accordance with their respective natures. Now, through creatures acting thus, corruption and evil result in things, since by reason of the contrariety and incompatibility that exist in things, one thing is corruptive of another. Therefore, it does not belong to divine providence to exclude evil from things altogether. Besides, an agent cannot possibly produce an evil, except by reason of its intending some good, as we proved above. Now, it does not belong to the providence of one who is the cause of all good to exclude from creatures all intention of any particular good, for thus many goods would be banished from the universe. Thus, if fire were deprived of the intention of producing its like, a consequence of which is this evil, namely the burning of combustible things, the good consisting in fire being generated and preserved in its species would be done away. Therefore, it is not part of divine providence to exclude evil altogether from things. Further, there are in the world many good things which would have no place unless there were evils. Thus, there would be no patience of the righteous, if there were no ill will of the persecutors, nor would there be any place for vindictive justice, were there no crimes. Even in the physical order there would be no generation of one thing, unless there were corruption of another. Consequently, if evil were entirely excluded from the universe by divine providence, it would be necessary to lessen the great number of good things. This ought not to be, since good is more powerful in goodness than evil is in malice, as was shown above. Therefore, evil should not be utterly excluded from things by divine providence. Again, the good of the whole is of more account than the good of the part. Therefore, it belongs to a prudent governor to overlook a lack of goodness in a part, that there may be an increase of goodness in the whole. Thus, the builder hides the foundation of a house underground, that the whole house may stand firm. Now, if evil were taken away from certain parts of the universe, the perfection of the universe would be much diminished, since its beauty results from the ordered unity of good and evil things, seeing that evil arises from the lack of good, and yet certain goods are occasioned from those very evils through the providence of the governor, even as the silent pause gives sweetness to the chant. Therefore, evil should not be excluded from things by divine providence. Further, other things, especially those of lower degree, are directed to man's good as their end. But if there were no evils in the world, man's good would be lessened considerably, both in his knowledge, and in his desire or love of the good. For his knowledge of the good is increased by comparison with the evil, and through suffering evil his desire of doing good is kindled. Thus the sick know best what a great good health is, and they, too, are more keen about it than those who have it. Therefore it does not belong to divine providence to exclude evil from the world altogether. Hence it is said, I make peace and create evil, and shall there be evil in the city, which the Lord hath not done? Hereby we refute the error of those who, through observing the presence of evil in the world, said that there is no God. Thus Boethius introduces a philosopher who asks if there be a God, whence comes evil. On the contrary, he should have argued, if there is evil, there is a God, for there would be no evil, if the order of good were removed, the privation of which is evil, and there would be no such order, if there were no God. Moreover, by what has been laid down, an occasion of erring is removed from those who denied that divine providence extends to this corruptible world, because they observed that many evils occur in it. They said that incorruptible things alone are subject to God's providence, because no defects and no evils are to be found in them. Also we remove an occasion of error from the Manichaeans, who posited two first active principles, good and evil, as though evil could have no place in the providence of a good God. Also the doubt is solved of some, namely whether evil deeds are from God. For since we proved that every agent produces its action in so far as it acts by the power of God, and that therefore God is the cause of all effects and actions, and since again we proved evil and defect in things ruled by divine providence result from the condition of the secondary causes, which may be themselves defective, it is evident that evil deeds, considered as defective, are not from God, but from their defective proximate causes. But in so far as they possess activity and entity, they must be from God, even as Olympus from the motive power, in so far as it has movement. But in so far as it has a defect, it is from the crookedness of the leg. Chapter 72. That divine providence does not exclude contingency from things. Just as divine providence does not altogether banish evil from the world, so neither does it exclude contingency, nor impose necessity on things. For we have already proved that the operation of providence, whereby God operates in the world, does not exclude secondary causes, but is fulfilled by them inasmuch as they act by God's power. Now certain effects are said to be necessary or contingent, in relation to their proximate, not to their remote cause. Thus for a plan to bear fruit is a contingent effect, on account of the proximate cause, which is the power of germination that can be hindered and fail, although a remote cause, namely the sun, is a cause that acts of necessity. Since, then, among proximate causes there are many that can fail, not all the effects subject to divine providence will be necessary, but many of them will be contingent. Again, it belongs to divine providence that the possible degrees of being be fulfilled, as was made evident above. Now being is divided into contingent and necessary, and this is a per se division of being. Therefore, if divine providence excluded all contingency, not all the degrees of being would be preserved. Besides, the nearer things are to God, the more they partake in a likeness to Him, and the further they are from Him, the more they fail in their likeness to Him. Now those things that are nearest to God are altogether immovable. These are separate substances who approach nearest to a likeness to God who is utterly immovable, while those that are nearest to them and are immediately moved by those that are unchangeable, retain a certain degree of immobility in that they are always moved in the same way, for instance the heavenly bodies. Consequently those that come after the foregoing, and are moved by them, are further removed from the divine immobility, so that, to wit, they are not always moved in the same way, and in this the beauty of order is evident. But every necessary thing, as such, never varies. Therefore it would be incompatible with divine providence, to whom it belongs to establish and preserve order among things, if all things happened of necessity. Moreover, that which is of necessity, is always. Now nothing corruptible is always. Wherefore if divine providence requires all things to be necessary, it would follow that nothing in the world is corruptible, and consequently nothing could be generated. Hence the whole range of things subject to generation and corruption would be withdrawn from the world, and this would be derogatory to the perfection of the universe. Further, in every movement there is generation and corruption of a kind, since in a thing that is moved, something begins, and another ceases to be. Consequently, if all generation and corruption were banished, through the withdrawal of all things contingent, as we have just proved, in consequence all movement and all movable things would be taken away. Besides, if the power of a substance be weakened, or if it be hindered by a contrary agent, this argues some change in that power. Consequently, if divine providence does not banish movement from things, it will prevent neither the weakening of their power nor the impediment arising from the resistance of another agent. Now it is because that power is sometimes weakened and hindered that nature does not work always in the same way, but sometimes fails in that which is competent to a thing according to its nature, so that natural effects do not follow of necessity. Therefore it does not belong to divine providence to impose necessity on the things governed. Moreover, in things that are duly ruled by providence, there should be nothing vain. Since therefore it is evident that some causes are contingent, seeing that they can be hindered from producing their effects, it is clearly inconsistent with providence that all things should occur of necessity. Therefore divine providence does not impose necessity on things, by excluding contingency from them altogether. Chapter 73. That divine providence does not exclude free will. Wherefore it is clear that providence does not exclude free will, for the government of any prudent governor is directed to the perfection of the things governed, as regards its attainment, increase or preservation. Therefore whatever pertains to perfection is to be safeguarded by providence rather than what savors of imperfection and defect. Now in inanimate beings, the contingency of causes arises from imperfection and deficiency, because by their nature they are determined to one effect, which they always produce, unless there be an impediment due either to weakness of power, or some extrinsic agency, or indisposition of matter. For this reason natural causes are not indifferent to one or other result, but more often produce their effect in the same way, and seldom fail. On the other hand, it is owing to the perfection of the will that it is a contingent cause, because its power is not confined to one effect, and it is in its power to produce this effect or that, so that it is indifferent to either. Therefore it belongs to divine providence to preserve the freedom of the will, more than contingency in natural causes. Moreover, it belongs to divine providence to use things according to their mode, and the mode of a thing's action is in keeping with its form, which is the principle of action. Now the form through which a voluntary agent acts is not determinate, because the will acts through a form apprehended by the intellect, since the apprehended good moves the will objectively, and the intellect has not one determinate form of the effect, but is of such a nature as to understand a multitude of forms, so that the will is able to produce manifold effects. Therefore it does not belong to divine providence to exclude freedom of the will. Again, the things governed are brought to a becoming end by the government of providence. Wherefore Gregory of Nyssa says of divine providence that it is God's will from which all existing things receive a fitting end. Now the last end of every creature is to attain to God's likeness, as we proved above. It would therefore be inconsistent with divine providence if anything were deprived of that whereby it attains to a likeness to God. But the voluntary agent attains to God's likeness in that he acts freely, for we have proved that there is free will in God. Therefore providence does not deprive the will of liberty. Besides, providence multiplies good things among the subjects of its government. Therefore anything that would deprive things of many good things does not belong to providence. Now if the will were deprived of freedom, many good things would be done away, for no praise would be given to human virtue. Since virtue would be of no account if man acted not freely, there would be no justice in rewarding or punishing. If man were not free in acting well or ill, and there would be no prudence in taking advice, which would be of no use if things occurred of necessity. Therefore it would be inconsistent with providence to deprive the will of liberty. Hence it is said, Ecclesiastes 15:14, God made man from the beginning and left him in the hand of his own counsel, and again Nibbit. 18 Before man is life and death, good and evil, that which he shall choose shall be given him. Hereby we refute the opinion of the Stoics who held that all things happen of necessity according to the order of infallible causes, which order the Greeks called Imarmevn. Chapter 74. That divine providence does not exclude chance or luck. It is also evident from what has been said that divine providence does not remove from the world chance and luck. Chance and luck are said of things that happen seldom. If nothing happened seldom, all things would happen of necessity, because those things that happen more frequently than not, differ from necessary things in this alone, that they may possibly fail in a few instances. Now it would be inconsistent with divine providence if all things happened of necessity, as we proved above. Therefore it would also be inconsistent with divine providence if there were no luck or chance in the world. Again, it would be contrary to the nature of providence if things subject to providence were not to act for an end, since it is the part of providence to direct all things to their end. And again it would be contrary to the perfection of the universe, were there nothing corruptible, nor any defectible power, as we proved above. Now it is owing to the fact that an agent acting for the sake of some end fails to attain that end, that certain things happen by chance. Therefore it would be contrary to the nature of providence, and to the perfection of the world, if nothing happened by chance. Besides, the number and variety of causes result from the ordering of divine providence and disposition. Now given a diversity of causes, it must happen sometimes that one concurs with another, so that one is either hindered or assisted in producing its effect. Now chance occurrences are due to the concurrence of two or more causes, through some end which was not intended ensuing from the concurrence of some cause. For instance, the finding of his debtor by one who went to market to buy something, resulted from the debtor also going to market. Therefore it is not incompatible with divine providence that there be luck and chance in things. Moreover, that which is not, cannot be the cause of anything, wherefore a thing must stand in relation to being a cause, in the same way as to being. Wherefore the diversity of order in causes must be in keeping with diversity of order among things. Now it belongs to the perfection of things that not only there be some that are beings per se, but that there be also some accidental beings, because things which have not their ultimate perfection in their substance must needs acquire some perfection by means of accidents, which accidents will be all the more numerous, as the things themselves are more distant from God's simplicity. Now if a subject has many accidents, it follows that it is a being accidentally, since subject and accident, or again to accidents in one subject, are one accidentally, for instance a white man, and a musical white thing. Therefore the perfection of the world requires that there should be also accidental causes. But that which results accidentally from a cause, is said to occur by chance or by luck. Therefore it is not inconsistent with providence that certain things happen by chance or luck. Further, it belongs to the order of divine providence that there be order in degrees among causes. The higher a cause is above its effect, the greater its power, so that its casualty extends to a greater number of things. But the intention of a natural cause never extends further than its power, for such an intention would be in vain. Consequently the intention of an individual cause cannot possibly extend to all possible contingencies. Now it is through things happening beside the intention of the agent that things occur by chance or luck. Therefore the order of divine providence requires the presence of luck and chance in the world. Hence it is said, I saw that, the race is not to the swift, etc., but time and chance in all, namely here below. Chapter 75. That divine providence is concerned with singular contingencies. From what we have proved, it is evident that divine providence reaches to each individual among things subject to generation and corruption. For apparently the only reason for excluding such things from providence would be their contingent nature, and the fact that many of them are chance or lucky occurrences, since in this alone do they differ from incorruptibles and from the universals of corruptible things, with which it is said that providence is concerned. Now providence is not inconsistent with contingency, chance and luck, as neither is it with voluntary action, as we have proved. There is no reason therefore why providence should not be about such things, even as it is about incorruptibles and universals. Besides, if God's providence does not extend to these singular things, this is either because he knows them not, or because he is unable or unwilling to care for them. But it cannot be said that God does not know singulars, since we have proved that he has knowledge of them. Nor can it be said that God is unable to care for them, since his power is infinite, as we proved above, nor that these singulars are incapable of being governed, since we see them to be governed by the purposeful activity of reason, as evidenced in man, or by natural instinct, as evidenced in bees and many dumb animals, which are governed by a kind of natural instinct. Nor can it be said that God is unwilling to govern them, since his will is the universal cause of all good, and the good of things governed consists chiefly in the order of government. Therefore it cannot be said that God has no care for these singulars. Besides, every secondary cause, by the mere fact of its being a cause, attains to a likeness to God, as was proved above. It is to be universally observed that things which are productive have the care of the things they produce. Thus animals naturally nourish their offspring. Therefore God has care of the things whereof he is the cause. Now he is the cause even of these singulars, as was proved above. Therefore he has care of them. Further, it was proved above that God acts on created things, not from natural necessity, but by his will and intellect. Now things that are done by will and intellect are subject to providence, which apparently consists in ruling things by the intellect. Consequently the things done by God are subject to his providence. But it has been proved that God works in all second causes, and that all effects of things are to be referred to God as their cause, so that whatever is done in these individuals is his own work. Consequently these individual things, their movements and operations, are subject to divine providence. Again, a man's providence is foolish if he cares not for those things without which the things he cares for cannot be. Now it is clear that if all individuals cease to exist, their universals would likewise cease. Wherefore if God cares only for universals, and neglects these individuals altogether, his providence will be foolish and imperfect. If, however, someone say that God cares for these individuals so far as to preserve them in existence, but no further, this is quite impossible, since whatever else happens in regard to individuals concerns their preservation or corruption. Consequently, if God cares for individuals as to their preservation, he cares also for whatever happens to them. Yet someone might say that the mere care of universals suffices for the preservation of individuals in existence, since each species is provided with the means of self-preservation for each individual of that species. Thus animals were given organs for taking and digesting food, and horns for self-protection, and the use of these organs does not fail except in the minority, since that which is of nature produces its effect either always or more frequently, so that all the individuals could not cease to exist, although some might. But, according to this way of reasoning, whatever happens to individuals will be subject to providence, even as their preservation in being, because nothing can happen to the individual member of a species that cannot in some way be referred to the principles of that species. Accordingly, individuals are not subject to divine providence as to their preservation in existence, more than in other matters. Moreover, the order of things in relation to the end is such that accidents are for the sake of substances, in order that the latter may be perfected by them, and in substances matter is for the sake of the form, since it is through the form that matter has a participation in the divine goodness, for the sake of which all things were made, as we proved above. Hence it is evident that the individual is for the sake of the universal nature, in sign of which, where the universal nature can be preserved in one individual, there are not many individuals of one species, as exemplified in the moon and sun. Now since providence has the ordering of things to their end, It follows that to providence belong both the ends and things directed to the end. Therefore, not only universals but also individuals are subject to divine providence. Again, the difference between speculative and practical knowledge is that speculative knowledge and things connected with it are perfected in the universal, whereas things pertaining to practical knowledge are perfected in the particular, because the end of speculative knowledge is truth, which consists first and of its very nature in immaterial and universal things, whereas the end of practical knowledge is operation, which is about individual things. Hence the physician does not heal a man in general, but this particular man, and the whole of medical science is directed to this. Now it is clear that providence belongs to practical knowledge, since it directs things to their end. Therefore, God's providence would be imperfect if it extended no further than universals and reached not the individual. Besides, speculative knowledge is perfected in the universal rather than in the particular, because universals are known better than individuals. Wherefore, the knowledge of the most universal principles is common to all. Yet the more perfect in speculative knowledge is he who possesses not only universal but also proper knowledge of things. Since he who knows a thing merely in general, knows it only potentially, for which reason the disciple is led from the general knowledge of principles to the proper knowledge of conclusions, by the master who is possessed of both knowledges, just as a thing is brought from potentiality to act by that which is in act. A fortiori, therefore, the more perfect in practical knowledge is he who directs things to act not only in general but also in particular. Consequently, divine providence, being supremely perfect, extends to individuals. Moreover, since God is the cause of being as such, as we proved above, it follows that his providence must care for being as such, since he governs things inasmuch as he is their cause. Therefore, whatever exists, no matter in what way it exists, is subject to his providence. Now, individuals are beings, and more so than universals, because universals do not exist by themselves, but only in individuals. Therefore, divine providence is concerned about individuals also. Further, creatures are subject to divine providence, as being directed thereby to their end, which is the divine goodness. Therefore, participation in the divine goodness by creatures is the work of divine providence. But even contingent singulars participate in the divine goodness. Therefore, divine providence must extend to them also. Hence it is said, "Are not two sparrows sold for a farthing, and not one of them shall fall on the ground without your Father," etc. And she reacheth from end to end mightily, that is, from the highest creatures to the lowest. Moreover, the opinion is refuted of some who said the Lord hath forsaken the earth, and the Lord seeth not, and of those who asserted he doth not consider our things, and he walketh about the poles of heaven. Hereby is refuted the opinion of some who maintain that divine providence does not extend to these individual things, an opinion ascribed by some to Aristotle, although it cannot be gathered from his words.